question that I look at when I write mixture lectures. And then the other resource is the quizzes. There's, 10 questions on each quiz for a total of 20 questions. So each quiz has 10 questions, and each question has 5 parts. So that means that I can write 50 questions from one table quiz. So there's 10 total questions. Each one has A, B, C, D, and E. So for each question, like number one, I can write 5 questions. Because I do focus on the distractors now. That's the reason I'm asking you to understand why the distractors are wrong, because the next time you see that concept, C will be correct instead of A. Question that you see in the midterm exam. So I can write 50, I can write 100 questions from that one or those 2 take-home quizzes. What am I saying? I'm saying the most important resources for you are the objective you find in the PowerPoint slides and the take-home quizzes. Make sure you thoroughly understand why the wrong answers are wrong. The last resource is your textbook. Way down the list. One of them, question number one, seems to produce a lot of problems here. Many microfractures in bone occur along cement lines. So I went back to the PowerPoint slide. One of the questions at the bottom of slide X was, what is a cement line? And if you don't know what a cement line is, then look for it somewhere, wherever you can. In the textbook, online, call me up in the middle of the night. Those are the objectives. And so another thing is that the lab parts and the take-home quizzes are a little harder than the midterm exam. Definition for cement line, it was only on one diagram. Let's look at that. It was only on one diagram in the PowerPoint slide. Collection, and it was a drawing from Juan Kiara's textbook, and it had a pointer pointing cement line or cement on it. See if we can find that here. I guess the reason I want to go through this exercise is because almost everything you need to know is on here on these PowerPoint slides, and if there's something that's not clear to you, and maybe it's a cement line, then you have to look elsewhere. There it is right there. There's the cement line. And you can see that it's outermost region of the osteotic. It's where Pluto circles its sun way out in far reaches. And it cements the neighboring lamellae together. Cements neighboring osteons and lamellae. And it's a cement line that has less collagen in it. And so if somebody were to fracture a bone and it's not a compound fracture, you can bet your bottom dollar that the crack in the bone goes right through the cement line, that it's the weakest part of the bone. should get through it today, even though it's 20 minutes past the hour here. I was kind of planning on doing some cardiovascular stuff as well, but I guess we'll forego that. And we talked about this slide toward the end of the hour last time. And I guess it would be useful for you to draw the cross-section of the spinal cord. We've got some more pictures coming up, but if you can draw the spinal cord and cross-section in place of where the ventral roots are and where the dorsal roots are and where the dorsal ganglion happens to be located, then you're almost there, aren't you? And the only other thing you have to do is place the individual neuron onto that drawing. We're going to look at a spinal cord here again, but the question is that you need to know an answer for is what is gray matter composed of? And gray matter is composed of the cell bodies that hopefully you saw in lab. The cell bodies of motor neurons and other neurons containing nissle bodies, and I'll show you a picture of that. Cell bodies. White matter contains what? Axons. No cell bodies and neurons there. Plenty of axons and plenty of neuroglial cells. So there's the gray matter versus white matter, and the motor neuron cell bodies are concentrated in the ventral part of that gray matter, ventral horn is called. And there are other neuron cell bodies in other places, but these are the ones that are supplying skeletal muscle cells. Cell bodies. Here's a drawing that I would ask you to make. You should be able to place the ventral root in its proper spot, the dorsal root and the dorsal root ganglion, and there in the dorsal root ganglion is the cell body. Over here would be the same on the other side. The cell body of a unipolar sensory neuron. Unipolar sensory neuron right there. Now, if you look histologically at a nerve, whether it be a small nerve attached to the spinal cord, or whether it be the femoral nerve running down your leg, or the sciatic nerve in the back here, doesn't matter. It'll contain these things. Some of the nerve fibers, or axons, are in fact sensory. Sensory neuron right there. And some of them running through that nerve will be sending action potentials in the other direction. Motor neuron. So if this is the femoral nerve here, then motor neuron signals are going that way, and sensory neuron action potentials are going the other way. That makes sense, I hope. And they're kind of all bundled together, much like a muscle. There's fascicles surrounded by a hairy something or other, each fascicle. And around each axon, or around each nerve fiber, there's an endo something or other, but it's not endomysium now, it's endo. Neurium. And then where's the epineurium in the picture? Same place that the epimysium is on muscle, but now it's epineurium.
Does it also run in between the fascicle?
Epineurium is a little different. Epineurium also runs between the fascicles, so that makes it different than muscle. It's a little different. But generally the principles are the same. Epineurium on the other side, perineurium around each fascicle, endoneurium around each nerve fiber, but it is true, the epineurium does do that, but I don't care much about that. Comparison of two different kinds of motor neurons, the one that supplies a skeletal muscle, whether it be in the hand or the leg or any place in the body. You might have, you might have in the leg a group of 200 skeletal muscle cells, 200 or so, and they're all supplied by a single neuron. If you have 400 muscle cells, then it would require two neurons to supply them, and so forth. And as always the case, the cell body for a somatic motor neuron is found in the ventral horn. And the axons of these cells form the ventral root. And then the axon runs either down your leg or through your arm until that axon reaches the muscle cells without any interruption. Let's look at smooth muscle cells. In the wall of this blood vessel will be plenty of smooth. In the wall of this artery will be plenty of smooth muscles to contract and relax and to contract and relax to alter blood flow. Well, smooth muscle is not skeletal muscle. And so here are the motor neurons, again in the gray matter of the spinal cord, but this time in the thoracic cord only, where the thoracic cord has a little nipple-looking thing there called the lateral horn of the spinal cord. And the cell body is multipolar. I wish they'd have drawn some dendrites. I guess we better draw some dendrites here. They're multipolar cell bodies with all kinds of hairs sticking off of them. And these sympathetic motor neurons poop out before they reach the smooth muscle cell. They don't go all the way like up here. And so the first neuron in the chain to smooth muscle cells has a cell body in the spinal cord, gray matter, lateral horn, and the axons are in the ventral root, and these axons end in a ganglion called the sympathetic ganglion. And so this motor neuron then is called the preganglionic neuron of the sympathetic nervous system. What is meant by pre-ganglion? It comes before the ganglion. So what should we name the one, motor neuron that goes to the muscle cell? What?
Post-ganglionic.
Pre-ganglionic and post-ganglionic neuron. Skeletal muscle doesn't need two neurons in a chain. Skeletal muscle has just one. Okay, considering this big picture now of the spinal cord, we need to summarize the reflex arc. Okay. Now, so the reflex arc is really part of this big picture, and it's intended to represent the simplest possible communication between neurons and our body. Most elemental connections, not the complicated ones up here that we're going to study in neuroscience class, but the very simplest kind of communication between sensory and motor neurons in the spinal cord. Reflex arcs also occur in the brain, but it's much more complicated. So in a reflex arc, forms connections and communications in the spinal cord only, we find a sensory neuron might be bringing information about pain from your skin or some other sense, like temperature or somebody touching you or tickling you or itching you or all kinds of some sort of sensory information. There's a receptor that's specific for a specific type of sense. There's pain fibers, and there's pain receptors, and there's touch receptors, and specific for each type of sensation. But the question in terms of general concept is, where in that neuron do we find the cell body? Or where in the center, where in the nervous system do we find the cell bodies of sensory neurons? And of course, they're in the dorsal root ganglion, right here. All of them. Not just a few, not 90%, but all of them. In other words, there's no cell bodies of sensory neurons in a nerve. There are no cell bodies of motor neurons in a nerve. All the motor neurons are in the ventral horn of the spinal cord, cell bodies. All the cell bodies of sensory neurons, whether it's some sensation down here or not. The place where the nucleus is located, the cell body, is found in the dorsal root ganglion. Always. How many cytoplasmic processes do these sensory cells have? Well, one. Bald-headed man with a skinny neck. One process. Now, that process is going to branch. Part of it's going up the sensor, and part of it's going into the central nervous system. What's the distribution of the distal branch of this one process? Sensory neuron has a cell membrane, and it has one process, the nucleus here, the nucleus, and then this one process divides into two. One part of it's called the distal, and one part is called the central. So where does the central process go? Into the central nervous system. Where does the distal process go? Out into your periphery where the sensor is. There's the central process going into the central nervous system. Here's the distal process going out to a sensor, like the Pacinian corpuscle that will look at more thoroughly in neuroscience class. Okay. Now, in the most common type of reflex heart, the sensory neuron comes in through the dorsal root, the central process goes into the central nervous system via the dorsal root, and then it synapses frequently, as you can see in this picture, synapses somewhere in the gray matter. And there's two possible locations, and we'll see that coming up here. One type of ending of the central process is in the dorsal gray matter, and there that sensory neuron ends on the dendrites of an interneuron.
Can you say that?
Yes, I'm going to show it to you here in a second. Cell body. sensory neuron. I'm going to try to clean that up a little bit. I'll make it a little bigger. What that thing is a cell body of the sensory neuron containing the nucleus. There will be no nuclei along the nerve axon. The axons don't have any nuclei. All the DNA is up in the cell body. And then the motor neuron is multipolar. Found in the ventral cord of the spinal cord, and if we're talking about skeletal muscle, and the signal to skeletal muscle. Where's the cell body located for the motor neuron? In the ventral cord of the spinal cord. What type of cell is it? Multipolar neuron.
Is there always only one interneuron, or would there be
many? It turns out that there can be multiple interneurons. And one interneuron might, in fact, another interneuron here that receives a signal, might, in fact, go across to the other side and activate a neuron on the other side. And that frequently happens. So let's see what we just drew. We drew a sensory neuron from the fingertip. This time it's pain receptor. The axon distal process conveys the axon potential toward the spinal cord. And there's the cell body, the lifeblood of the neuron. Cut off the head, and that neuron dies. Cut off the ball-headed cell body right there, and that neuron will no longer exist because that's the life force of that neuron. There's the interneuron. And so what would you expect to happen if someone puts their hand on a hot stove and the pain fiber gets sizzling hot? What's going to happen to the hand? Pull away. And so the information of the sizzling finger goes in here. Meets an inner neuron. The motor neuron comes out here to skeletal muscle, and the arm moves away. Reflex arm. Sensory motor. Sensory motor is a pin. Sensory motor. That's obviously very important for our survival, isn't it? Well, we have other kinds of reflexes where there is no interneuron. In this particular one, it shows to be an autonomic reflex going to the gut, smooth muscle here. But there are other reflexes like this, no interneuron, and I can draw one here. A different one now. The sensory cell body is always in the same place. Ventral process comes in here. Distal process has a sensor on it somewhere in the skin. The axon goes to the motor neuron directly. No interneuron. And then the axon potential goes out to skeletal muscle. This kind of reflex is called a monosynaptic reflex because there's only one area of communication, a mono communication right there. So this particular monosynaptic reflex is one that you will frequently do in a general exam. Patient sitting in their chair, and you're going to grab out of your little black bag a little tool that's a hammer. And what's that hammer called?
A reflex
hammer. You bought it yet? Pretty soon. They, remember these people coming, they were in the hall, set up in the hall with tables, and they're selling all these medical instruments for the second year students. Take out the little reflex hammer, and you're going to initiate a reflex, monosynaptic reflex. Take the little hammer, hit the tendon, sensory motor, sensory motor, sensory motor, sensory motor.
All right.
And your patient better do that right, or you write down the chart. Something wrong. Or you know what's wrong by how responsive that reflex is. We're looking at the big picture of how
sensory and motor neurons relate with one another, and the simplest of all communications is this monosynaptic reflex with a sensory neuron bringing the axis potential in, an area of synapse here, and then the motor response there as the leg kicks in response to tapping the propeller pin. Okay, so types of neurons, histological types, there's that unipolar or pseudo-unipolar, either one's good. Here's the motor neuron, this was the sensory neuron. Cell body in the dorsal root ganglion, cell body here is in the ventral horn. And the axons travel out to skeletal muscle. Here's another special kind of sensory neuron called a bipolar, and Ross has a much better picture of bipolar neurons. Here's a bipolar. Why is it called bipolar? Because it has two processes. Count them. One. And now that's a lot down here, and a lot up here, but those are not connected to the cell body. The point of reference is the cell body. There's one, two processes attached to the cell body. These are neurons of special senses. Sight, smell, hearing, balance, taste. Special sense neuron. So the pseudo-unipolar or unipolar neuron, along with the special sense neuron here, these are all sensory neurons. Over here on the far right. Here on the far right. Ones we talked about a little while ago are the classic histological representations for a somatic motor neuron. How do you know that? Because it's supplying skeletal muscle. Over here are the histological drawings of the first neuron in the chain. So what are we going to call this first neuron in supplying smooth muscle? What's that called? A little louder. Pre-ganglionic, very good. Pre-ganglionic. Let's go back and look at it here. There it is there. Here's, you named it from earlier. There's the pre-ganglionic, the first one. And over here is the second one, going up the smooth muscle. That's the post-ganglionic, you told me. And so don't fail me here. This one's called preganglionic, and there's the smooth muscle. And what's this one called down here?
Postganglionic.
Postganglionic. We're postsynaptic, yes.
So
the
presynaptic and
preganglionic,
same
thing. Why presynaptic, you think? Because the axis potential is moving toward the, from here toward where?
Synapses.
We haven't talked about synapses yet. We're going to talk about that soon. Heading toward the site of synapse. These other neurons in the middle here, are they unipolar? Are they bipolar? Or what are they?
Multipolar.
This one's found in your cerebrum, in the cerebral cortex, shaped like a pyramid. If you look at slide E1A, talks about beautiful pyramidal cells on that one. Here's the multipolar neuron found in the cerebellum. Talk about an elegant-looking multipolar neuron, and the drawing doesn't do it justice because those are the largest neurons in your body, in G7. Any questions about this sketch? We have similar reflexes for pain, so we might see a very similar reflex in the pain. But as far as our discussion goes so far, we've only talked about it. I can do one for pain or right here. Sensory neurons do not go into the spinal cord. But there are some cranial nerves also that have these connections. Okay. Let's talk a little bit more in detail about the multipolar neuron, and we're not going to deal too much more with the unipolar neuron. So what did you see in lab when you drew that multipolar neuron cell body in the spinal cord? Do you recall what you drew? What's the structure of the cell body? What does it contain? Do you recall? Nucleus? Nucleus? And what were those blue things called?
Missile
body. There are various shapes to multipolar neurons. We saw some were pyramidal and some looked like these fancy hair of one of Dr. Zeus's animals. What are some various shapes? Various shapes are pyramidal shaped. Some of them are look like the Purkinje cells. Some of them are kind of roundish or oval shaped. What are the organelles we're asking you to consider? Well, these really big nucleolus. And one of the reasons we're asking you to do that is because if you see a large cell that you think might be a neuron, the prominent nucleolus might help you identify it as a neuron rather than something else. So we're going to look at some here. What are missile bodies? Anybody? There's something in the cytoplasm of the cell body. Anybody know? Rough ER, right? Rough ER and ribosomes. And the neuron is packed with ribosomes and rough ER. The neuron also has some microtubules and microfilaments that combine to form a cytoskeletal element that's special to the neurons called neurofibrils. And it's a combination of microtubules and microfilaments. And when we get to neuropath, we'll see that there are a number of different diseases, like Parkinson's disease, for example, where the cell fills up with this stuff, the neurofibrils, and the pathologist can recognize a defect. Why would neurons have so much wear and tear pigment lipoproteins?
They don't divide.
They don't divide. You have those cells for a lifetime, most of them anyway. What's the axon hillock? Where would we look for the axon hillock? Right near the cell body and the beginning of what? Beginning of the axon. What happens there? The action potential is initiated there, okay? And what are the dendrites? Well, they're all these little hairs, aren't they, that stick out from the cell body. And we'll talk more about their function in neuroscience class. Some dendrites, some of these processes, have some very prominent lumps on them called dendritic spines, where I'll show you some in a second, where the surface area of the dendrite is increased. Not all dendrites have these little lumps. Many of them do. And do you recall what we said about what kind of bioelectrical, what kind of signal occurs on the surface of dendrites? Is it an action potential? Because the action potential is generated where? At the axon hillock. So what's going on with dendrites then? Some other kind of electrical activity that's called graded potentials, and we'll work with them later. I know your slides weren't quite as elegant as this, but notice the missile bodies, and what's this big, dark object right in the middle of this somewhat pale thing there?
Nucleolus,
and the pale thing is a nucleus. And so most of the neurons that we're going to ask you to look for in the gut, in the spinal cord, wherever those neurons might be, we'll make sure that you have an opportunity to see this prominent histological characteristic, the nucleolus. Anybody remember from week one what the nucleolus does? Makes ribosomes, right. Makes ribosomes. And And those ribosomes that are made in the nucleolus, where do they go? Where do they end up? Out in the cytoplasm. And in this neuron here, name me the structure that those ribosomes will be found in after they leave the nucleus. The missile bodies. Concentrated in missile bodies. So what's going on in missile bodies? Protein synthesis, right? Lots of protein synthesis. Hey, this looks a little bit more like what you had in lab. It says axon here. I guess that's okay. I don't see much, but I guess that's all right. There's that nucleolus, and there's the missile bodies. There's the dendrites here and some dendrites there. Why don't you see all the dendrites? Because of the slice. If you don't cut through the dendrites, then you don't see them, right? So it depends on how thin that slice is. And those dendrites stick out on all directions in three-dimensional, just like your head. The hairs stick out in all different directions. If you don't slice through that dendrite, then you don't see it. We're going to talk about glial cells toward the end of the session today. Here's a drawing made from an electron microscopic picture, and the dendrites are seen here with their neurofibrils, a combination of microtubules and filaments, cytoskeleton. Here's a missile body, a lot of ribosomes, a little rough ER, but a lot of ribosomes concentrated. And there's that nice nucleolus here. And if this has axon hillock, then what's this process down here then?
Axon.
Axon moving down toward a muscle somewhere. Here are some of the fancy cells in the cerebellum, the Purkinje cells we'll talk a little bit about in neuroscience. They all line up so beautifully. Some of the slides in your collection will have some Purkinje cells in them. What part of the neuron conducts the main signal to the muscle? How do you answer that? What's the structure that contains, that transmits the axon?
Axon.
What's the name of the cell membrane of the axon, do you think? Axolemma. 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 So let's draw one of those axolemmas, both in longitudinal and cross section. Longitudinal section of the axon and a cross section of the axon, and the axolemma is the outer most surface phospholipid bilayer. It's the plasma membrane of the axon. Does the axon have any branches? We're talking motor neurons now. As you follow the axon of a motor neuron in the femoral nerve and descending down the leg, when you get to the end, would you expect there be any branches?
Yes.
And why would that be? Because you have to supply multiple muscle fibers. I don't know too many places in the body where one neuron, where one axon supplies only one skeletal muscle. That doesn't happen. So in the leg, we might have to supply several hundred muscle cells by this one axon. So it's going to get a lot of branches at its end, and every once in a while there'll be a branch along the way, down the leg, or down the arm, move on to lateral branches. Sometimes those lateral branches occur inside the central nervous system. What happens at the distal end of the axon? What are you going to find there? When we're talking about motor neurons, what are you going to find at the distal end of the axon? Motor end plate, another name for it? Neuromuscular junction. What happens there at the neuromuscular junction on the surface of the sarcolemma of a skeletal muscle cell? What happens at the neuromuscular junction? Acetylcholine is released. What does that happen next? Binds to the receptor on the sarcolemma. What happens next? Sodium channels open, and what happens next? So the mind rush in, and what happens next? An action potential is initiated in the Sartre dilemma. And where does that action potential go? When it's on the surface of the muscle cell, where does it go as it's flowing along the surface of the muscle cell?
Down
the T-tubule. Down the transfer tubule. Good. It is 5 o'clock on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And you started it. Well, the branches here are histologists call them branches are called cheilodendria, and the ends of the axons where the neuromuscular junction is located ends up becoming fat and chubby. So the skeletal muscle. Here, the axon's coming down, and it's the definitive diameter, and then it enlarges. That axon enlarges, and it's called a terminal gluton. And that's where the acetylcholine is stored, inside the terminal gluton. That's skeletal muscle, for the skeletal muscle contraction process. And we've seen this particular drawing already. Yes?
What is the
Phalodendria are all these branches that you see down here, which is necessary to supply multiple muscle cells. We also see some collateral branches along the way as the axon is descending maybe to the leg or the foot.
There.
Most axons to skeletal muscle, or I might dare say all axons, the skeletal muscle are not naked. They're not there. And so the axolemma becomes covered with something. What am I drawing here?
Myelin.
Now, in the peripheral nervous system, the myelin is made by what cell? Terminal gluons were these endings of the axon indenting the sarcolemma. In fact, when we get into the central nervous system and we look at all synapses are little round holes. E.T.'s finger. Remember E.T.'s finger? Nice and straight. But what did E.T. have on the end of the finger? A terminal gluton. Okay, so Schwann cells make this myelin. So let's put a nucleus here. Of Schwann cells. Is a Schwann cell a neuron?
No.
So what is a nerve fiber composed of then? I drew a nerve fiber there for you. What's a nerve fiber composed of?
Axon.
What other cell?
Neuroglial.
What other cell besides the axon makes up a nerve fiber? What other cell?
Schwann
cell. Good. Nerve fiber is more complicated, isn't it, than a muscle fiber? What makes up a skeletal muscle fiber? A skeletal muscle cell. What makes up a nerve fiber? A neuron plus one cell. Two cells. Two different cells. You can destroy the axon by cutting here. That doesn't kill the Schwann cell. Schwann cell's going to remain behind. How about in the central nervous system? What cell makes myelin there?
Oligodendrocytes.
Name a disease of oligodendrocytes.
Multiple sclerosis.
Name a disease of Schwann cells. Guillain-Barré syndrome. The point is that there are different diseases affecting the two different cells, and totally independent of one another. This is kind of a much better drawing, isn't it, than the one that I drew there. showing that the nota rangae is not a naked axon. The nota rangae is not a naked axon. There is Schwann cell cytoplasm, no myelin there, but there's Schwann cell cytoplasm. Question? I can read it there. I have a hard time because I run out of breath. I run out of breath at the end of the word. I'll take a deep breath there. Oligodendrocyte. Got it. Oligodendrocyte. So the myelin is over here, and we're going to talk about myelin in the second hour. Not quite yet, but the myelin is a product, you might say, of the Schwann cell. It is not made by the neuron. The neuron is this down here. What, did anybody read ahead? What do histologists call, the membrane on the outside of a nerve fiber? Here's the axon, there's the axolemma. What's this one out here? That's the cell membrane of the Schwann cell. That's the cell membrane out here. This is the axial member there. There's the membrane of the Schwann cell. Anybody know the name of that? The outermost, the diameter of the nerve fiber is right here. And the outer diameter of the nerve fiber is the membrane of the Schwann cell called neurolemma. The neurolemma is a Schwann cell membrane, and the axolemma is an axon cell membrane. And then, that's something we have to add because we're going to have to see regeneration of this at some point in pathology class. But on the outer of every nerve fiber is another structure that aids in regeneration if the nerve would be cut. And so if I were to draw it on the nerve fiber, it's around the outside like that. Let's compare that with a muscle fiber. Over here we'll draw a skeletal muscle fiber. And I got a nucleus here and a nucleus there. What tells you that I'm drawing a cross-section of a skeletal muscle fiber? The nuclei are where? All around the outside. What if I draw on this and put the nucleus in here? Then what? That is a cardiac muscle cell or smooth muscle cell. Now I'm going to put that same red thing around the outside, the sarcolemma here. Little squiggly thing. What is that thing? What's what? I heard it. No.
Some kind of museum.
Let me draw the same thing in something that you're familiar with. Here is what tissue? What tissue am I drawing?
Epithelium.
What tissue? If you put epithelium on the lab test, you're going to get it wrong. What tissue?
Epithelium.
Yeah. Oh, we'll give you 50%.
Okay.
What did I draw there?
Simple
polymer epithelium. Now you got it right. Before you had it wrong on the lab test. Now you got it right. Simple columnar epithelium. And I'm going to put this little red thing down here like that. There it is right there. Basal lamina. So every muscle cell has a basal lamina around the outside. Every nerve fiber has a basal lamina around the outside, which remains behind when the cells die so that regeneration is possible. And here's the electron microscopic image of a cross-section of the axon, belongs to the neuron, and the myelin made by the Schwann cell, and there's the basal lamina. This fuzzy little layer, DL, fuzzy little layer on the outside. This myelin is made by the Schwann cell, this axon belongs to the neuron. There. The reason I'm not taking a break is because we took 20 minutes here to BS before.
Took 3 hours. I know.
Oligodendrocytes don't make basal laminin, and therefore you're not going to see any basal lamina in the white matter of the CNS. No basal lamina in the spinal cord, no basal lamina in the cerebrum. We're going to talk about how this myelin forms here in just a second. But first of all, let's look at what happens when two neurons communicate with one another. Let's talk about the synapse. The synapse is the site where one neuron makes contact with another one and a signal is exchanged. There are different types of synapses. Most of the ones we're going to talk about and most that we'll encounter are chemical synapses. But we have another kind of synapse that occurs not only between neurons, but between muscle cells and epithelial cells. And these so-called synapses are called gap junctions. Actually, what I really mean here is that there are neurons that have gap junctions. There are neurons that communicate with one another not by chemical synapses. And what do you think the difference is between the two of them based upon their name? Which one is a neuromuscular junction, the electrical or the chemical?
Chemical.
Okay, chemical synapses have neurotransmitters, and electrical synapses do not. The presynaptic membrane is the membrane of the incoming axon, bringing the signal to the next cell. And we're going to look at the postsynaptic membrane in the drawing here in a minute. And we're going to locate the synaptic vesicles within the terminal bouton, within the terminal end of that axon. And then we'll also talk about what happens at the synaptic cleft, whether it be a neuromuscular junction or not a neuromuscular junction. So let's look at this cell body of a motor neuron in the spinal cord and talk about a lot of activity. Here's that. There's that cell body right in here, one that you drew in lab, and the axon's coming out, got all kinds of dendrites here. Well, that cell body, as you see, is covered with little polywogs. And these little polywogs are terminal boutons of another neuron bringing signals in. So sometimes these neurons, axons are coming from here. Some of them are coming from over here. Some of them are coming from down here. And so this president of Bastyr University here, the ventral horn cell, has got all these students talking to the president, the director of facilities here, the vice president of academic affairs, all this input coming in. Trying to tell this motor neuron when it should be activated and when it should not be activated. When we want muscles to contract and when we don't want muscles to contract. Or how much do we want them to contract? Do we want them to contract a little bit or a lot? And so these motor neurons are receiving thousands of inputs from other neurons, making the nervous system very complicated. And here's one of these little polywog endings here called the terminal bouton or knob. Some simply call it a knob. And the presynaptic membrane belongs to the incoming axon. Signal is coming down the axon from the cell body down this way. So, and the presynaptic membrane belongs to the incoming signal. The postsynaptic membrane is on a dendrite or on the main part of the body. But most of the time, these synapses are on the dendrites. Postsynaptic implies that it is on the other side of the signal, the direction of the signal. You can see the synaptic vesicles here containing neurotransmitter, which release, and the neurotransmitter dumps into the synaptic cleft, just like a neuromuscular junction, and binds to the postsynaptic membrane. If this neurotransmitter in these synaptic vesicles were to pop like little 7-Up bubbles, and the neurotransmitter is released into the synaptic cleft and binds to a receptor on the surface of the dendrite here, binds to receptor, what do you think is going to happen next? Neurotransmitter is released from the presynaptic cell, dribbles across the synaptic cleft, binds to a receptor, what happens next? Eventually, an action potential might be generated. We don't know for sure, though, in this case. So this is just like a neuromuscular junction, isn't it? The neurotransmitter is released from the presynaptic cell, and the neurotransmitter goes across this little synaptic cleft, binds to a receptor on the other side, which then might, among other things, might open sodium channels, or it might do something else. Here's this synaptic spine. Some dendrites have a little bulge on their surface. Some are smooth, and here's the axon coming into the dendrite, or the cell body. And you can see the presynaptic membrane, the synaptic vesicles, the synaptic cleft, and, of course, the postsynaptic membrane. Signals coming in from above. Action potential is being transmitted down the axon to cause the synaptic vesicles to pop. And we're not going to worry about all those varieties of synapses there. We will talk about this one, though. Sometimes this motor neuron in the ventral horn of the spinal cord needs to be activated. And so we have excitatory neurons that might be up in my brain here. The cell body might be way up here. And this axon's going down to above my butt. Going from up here, let's say, going down there. And it's excitatory, and it's going to cause this motor neuron to fire. But sometimes we don't necessarily want that motor neuron to fire in an uncontrollable way. And so Mother Nature has created what? To moderate the enthusiasm of the excitatory neuron in my brain. And what's the function of these neurons here? To inhibit this one here. Just calm down, don't get excited. We're not running here. We're sitting in a chair between our legs, you know? We're not kicking a soccer ball. We're just got restless leg syndrome. So we're just going to shake our leg a little bit. Well, we have inhibitory neurons that kind of inhibit the function of the motor neuron. And you can see a couple ways that happens. The inhibitory neuron might synapse on the terminal bouton. Or that inhibitory signal may end directly on the cell body itself. This particular one here is illustrated here, where the axon comes and moderates the output of this one, and this one here is directly. We have all those possibilities. In the electron microscope, you can see the synaptic vesicles are membrane-bound, phospholipid little balls containing the neurotransmitter, whatever it might be. Could be acetylcholine, could be dopamine, could be serotonin, could be all kinds of different neurotransmitters. Another drawing from Ross shows synaptic vesicles in the terminal bouton. The signal's coming from above and coming down. And these neurotransmitters released. It passes across the synaptic cleft, binds to the receptors on the postsynaptic membrane, and then something's going to happen. Maybe it's sodium gates opening, or maybe it's not. More on the nerve fiber. nerve fibers that are motor in function to skeletal muscle and in the smooth muscle are all myelinated. And what cell makes that myelin again?
Schwann cell.
Some nerve fibers have Schwann cells on them, but no myelin is formed by the Schwann cell. Let me say that again. Some axons have Schwann cells on their surface, but the Schwann cell does not make myelin. We've got to look at that here. The myelinated nerve fibers are usually the largest nerve fibers in our body, in the nervous system. Large diameter fibers that conduct signals at a very fast, 100 meters per second, very fast conduction rate of signal. 100 meters per second. Well, if this is 1 meter, and we had a large diameter nerve fiber beginning up here at my butt, and that's 1 meter, and the signal goes 100 meters per second, could you figure out how much time it takes to go 1 meter? Yeah, very quickly, huh? Where's the neurolemma located? It's on the very outside of the nerve fiber. What are nodes of Ranvier? I think you know. Myelin is made by the Schwann cell. There's no myelin at the nodes, however. What happens at a node of Ranvier? Have you covered that yet? Yeah, that's where the action potential is regenerated. As the signal flows down the axon, it's where the nodes of Ranvier, where the action potential is constantly being regenerated as we move down. What's this composition, basically? Protein, carbohydrate, nucleic acid. Fat, good. Fat. Triglycerides, some protein. What cell makes the myelin? Schwann cell, right? Or oligodendrocyte in CNS. Where is the axon within the nerve fiber?
Middle.
Appearance of myelinated nerve fibers. Did you get that far in lab? Oh, you did. What do they look like in the microscope when you look at a nerve fiber in a nerve? Did it look like this?
Yeah.
Or did it look like? Did it look like that, maybe? Yeah. Why can't you see this stuff here in the microscope when you're looking at the fat and it's all washed away? Longitudinal sections were a nightmare, weren't they? We're going to look at some here. Cross-section of nerve fiber is a piece of cake compared to longitudinal. Is that what we said with skeletal muscle? Ah, skeletal muscle, longitudinal, no sweat. Cross-section, very different here, isn't it? Longitudinal sections are tough. Nerve. Cross sections are easy because they look like lifesavers. They look like circular little lifesavers. So here's how myelin is made. During embryonic development, we have an axon running down the leg, coming out at you. Cell body is over near the room somewhere. And these Schwann cells, like little leeches, grow onto the surface of the axon. And the cell membranes of the Schwann cell kiss here. The lips surround the axon. And then an interesting thing happens. The cell membrane begins to wrap. Whether this happened or not is still debatable, but it makes a good story. Cell membranes begin to wrap like a jelly roll. So we have layer after layer after layer after layer Schwann cell, and this is loaded with lipid, some protein. But you remember, cell membranes are phospholipids, mostly. Not as much protein here as you might imagine. And there's still some cytoplasm of the Schwann cell around the outside. Here's the neurolemma, there's the axolemma, and there's the myelin. Another three-dimensional view. I like this one better, really. It shows the Schwann cell hugging the axon and closing its arms around the axon. Can't see the axon now. And then we begin this dance, the twirling of the cell membrane as we wrap that cell membrane around that axon to make that myelin. And that's what we were looking at way back here. There. Cell membranes at higher mag are shown here. And what we've got is one layer after another, maybe 50 times, that cell membrane wraps around that axon to make this thick layer of myelin. And the axon is in the center.